we are here at the foot of the Lukenya Hills, outside of the city of Nairobi, a very pristine and fitting location. And as we have this conversation, behold yourself that we have antelopes amongst us, demonstrating that wildlife is alive and well. But yet, it is in that context that we must talk about poaching. For a long time, African wildlife had been decimated through the abject abandon nature of the poachers who ran riot across different parts of the continent of Africa. The Eastern Africa, the home of the Big Five. The Southern Africa, also the home of the Big Five. The Central Africa and West Africa all were subjected to the cruel and selfish activities of the poachers, with the consequence that the world came to realize that if nothing was done, the species that we so admire, so adore, and that adorn our wildlife world would be decimated. And the world responded in different ways. There are countries that enacted the pieces of legislation that were specifically designed to ensure that hunting was controlled. They used the word culling. Internationally, the response was the convention that deals in and trade in endangered species of flora and fauna, CITES. But even that has not helped. I remember in the 1970s, when elephants were hunted for their tusks. I remember in those days, and I'm speaking in the past tense, not because it has stopped, it is still alive and well, but I remember when the rhinos were poached for their horns, when the leopards were poached for their skin, when the lions were poached for their claws, and this led to a situation where we were beginning to get worried. The question is, what is the impact of poaching in different sectors of African economies? Many African countries rely on tourism, and the tourism that they rely on depends on the animals that the tourists are attracted to. So if poaching is allowed to continue with abject abandon, then the impact on the economies is devastating. Let us look at Africa from a regional perspective. If one visits the southern part of Africa, we know that there are major parks, the Kruger in South Africa, Chobe in Botswana, and we have different animals, but there are those that attract poachers most. The elephant has been one of the animals that has attracted the poachers most, and it has been difficult to control those who are poaching elephants. Today, it is estimated that there are anything between 30,000 and 40,000 elephants in the wild, and that if poaching continues apace without being controlled, then in the next few years, we'll not have elephants at all. The markets include China, which is one of the greatest buyers of elephant tusks for different purposes. It is assumed that it brings about luck. But there are also those countries that argue that if the elephants are not culled from time to time, then it introduces another problem, the conflict between the elephants and human beings. And I know, for example, that the government of Botswana does allow culling or organized hunting in order to control the population of elephants. It may very well be so in a country such as Botswana, where the population is small, but in other countries where the population is big and the population of elephants is also reducing dramatically, the question is, what should be done? Kenya and Tanzania find themselves in that space where the population of elephants has reduced dramatically, and there have been attempts at ensuring that trade in elephant tusks is reduced dramatically. In the other areas in Central Africa, to include the Democratic Republic of Congo, to include Gabon, to include Cameroon, where the population of elephants has also reduced dramatically, we now know that very little is being done and that poachers are running riot in those areas. And it's not only the elephants that are victimized in that regard, the rhinos. In fact, the rhinos are greater victims to the extent that their population has reduced dramatically, both the white and the black rhino. And it is assumed in different parts of the world that the rhino horn is an aphrodisiac. And when it is used in that regard, then you can imagine how difficult it is to control those who are engaged in poaching. It is also noted that other animals are being victimized in that regard. The zebra, even in their abundance, have not been spared, as have the leopards and the other big cats. It is important, therefore, that when we talk about poaching, we also talk about educating the population. In many African countries, particularly in East Africa, to me in Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania specifically, efforts have been made to educate the population. And those who are calling for education are now beginning to go back to the traditional ways of ensuring that the human-animal relationship is regulated. The Maasai of Kenya, for example, will tell those who are willing to hear that we lived with these animals and we did so in a manner that was mutually beneficial, and we did not encroach into their space. Today, one of the problems that has arisen is human development has encroached into the habitats of these animals, and the impact has been human-animal conflict. And when there is that conflict, the poachers also take advantage of it, and they take advantage to the detriment of the species, which are diminishing at a jet-like pace. The other thing that must be done is to train those who are involved in control of wildlife. And this is critical because governments must realize that if indeed tourism is the lifeblood of many countries, as we know in different parts of the continent of Africa, particularly in the southern part of Africa and in the eastern part of Africa, and to a lesser extent in the central part of Africa, then deliberate efforts must be made to ensure that these animals are protected. And protection means that we do not engage in activities which undermine their survival and their propagation. And this is important and needs to be underlined, because as we talk about regulation of trade to ensure that poaching is reduced dramatically, it is also instructive to recognize that the poachers are internationally connected, so that the African poacher is not just a lone ranger in Kruger or in Chobe or in Amboseli or in Tsavo or in Mara or in the Serengeti, but he or she is a person who is connected to the markets in the world, the markets in Asia, the markets not so big in Latin America, the markets in Europe, and the markets in the Arab world. So this chain of evil that continues to engage in poaching in a dangerous way is the one that must be broken. The other thing that must be done is that governments must collaborate, because animals know no boundaries and animals need no passports to move from one area to the other. It is therefore critical that countries collaborate. The elephants that find themselves during one season in the Kruger Park will find themselves in the Chobe Park at another season. The elephants that are to be found in the Amboseli or in the Tsavo will find themselves in Manyara and Serengeti, as will the animals in the Mara. And it's therefore critical that governments collaborate regionally. In East Africa, it is important that East African countries enact legislation that defies the boundaries and are designed to protect these animals. We know, for example, like the gorillas, which are to be found in the Democratic Republic of Congo, are the very same that are to be found in Rwanda. They migrate from the to the impenetrable forest from the Virunga Mountains. And it is important, therefore, that the governments of the Democratic Republic of Congo and the governments of Rwanda collaborate within the region, The same is true with the situation in Southern Africa. That is important that the South African government collaborates with that of Botswana and that of Zimbabwe and even Angola to ensure that legislation is enacted which is designed to put a stop to poaching, as is the situation in Central Africa, in Cameroon, in Gabon, in Congo Brazzaville, and of course the Democratic Republic of Congo, and even in Central African Republic. Deliberate effort must be made to ensure that that happens. Another thing that we don't talk about as often as we should is the continuing conflicts in certain regions. As long as there are armed conflicts in Eastern Congo or in Central African Republic or in Cameroon or in Sudan, those who are combatants in those areas will sometimes engage in poaching in order to finance these conflicts. And one of the ways in which we should deal with this is to ensure that we resolve these conflicts in order to eliminate a situation where these animals are poached. We know for a fact that certain rebels active, for example, against Uganda in the Queen Elizabeth Park are engaged in poaching, as indeed they are engaged in poaching in the Virunga Mountains. So going forward, one must realize, particularly in the continent of Africa, that there is need to control poaching, and poaching can be controlled if there is international collaboration. And in this regard, the convention that deals with trade in endangered flora and fauna ought to be given local teeth through proper legislation and proper enforcement. Sometimes in Africa, it's not the absence of legislation that we talk about, but enforcement. It is also true that there are elements, some of them even within certain African governments, who collaborate with poachers, and these individuals should be identified and dealt with firmly, because poaching is a danger to diversity. And if we respect diversity as an important ingredient in human relations, human affairs and animal affairs, then poaching must be dealt a death blow. It is a danger not only to the animals, but is a danger to us, because nature not only requires but demands and respects diversity, and animals must be protected and must not be decimated. This is a very pristine environment where we are looking at nature in its unadulterated form, but we must say our goodbyes to continue the conversation at another time.